Before we start, I'm going to do the set aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Let me let go of all of my old ideas, remove them so that I won't have any blockage from you. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. Yes. For those listening to the podcast, we had a great, great birthday today. Something really special. And it's a great reminder of the power of this program. Today we're on, we're finished step 11 in the big book, and we got through page 88, and then I spent some time. We did the carry this message on step 10, and then we did the spiritual axiom. When there's something wrong with us and we're disturbed, it's my problem. And we did that from the 12 and 12, and then last week I copied from the steps we took. The steps we took is by Joe McHugh. It's on Amazon. It's a fantastic book. And Carry This Message is also on Amazon by Joe McHugh. He didn't write it, but three people interviewed him and put his thoughts down on Carry This Message is how you sponsor and how you get sponsored through the steps. The steps we took is like we're going to read today, excellent commentary on what the step really is all about, following the big book. Joe changed my life and others in 1979 at an Al-Anon meeting when he met Charlie P. And then they exchanged information on the big book, studied it together. They didn't live in the same town. Then they eventually started the Joe and Charlie meetings, which I think kept the message alive. And now there's a renaissance of big book studies in the last probably 10 years. We're doing step 11, tapping the inner resource. For those who are new, they wonder, well, what the hell are we doing? We're in step 11, but step 11 is really what, if you're new, what you want to do. You want to be able to have a relationship with God that works so that you can rely on God and not yourself, and then your life won't become unmanageable, and then you won't have to become irritable, restless, and discontent, and drink. The thing I was going to say when we celebrated our birthday is the person who celebrated described how his alcoholism, as his thinking, started way before he took the first drink. Mm-hmm. And at 8 years of age, when he took a drink, it relieved it. And I remember Passover Seder, drinking that Matoshevitz wine, saying, this is really good stuff. And I was like 12 or 13, and I kept going upstairs and getting a little bit more of the wine. I said, well, where has this stuff been? But I wasn't a really good alcoholic because I didn't remember that, like in between, you know. Then the next Passover, I remembered that, but it took me a while to get the click between the two anyway. Step 11 is the culmination of the steps. It's the improving our conscious contact with God every day. Because my conscious contact with God yesterday won't help me at noon today. It's a daily reprieve based upon my fit spiritual condition, which is my relationship with God. Now, if you're new, you're saying, well, what's he talking about? Well, our disease has nothing to do with alcohol. Alcohol was a symptom of our disease. Our disease is my self-centeredness, my separation from God, running my life, victim of the delusion that I could manage my life well. It would work out if I could just manage better. Anybody else have that? And I still have that on occasions, and I know it's not, I have it when my life is starting to get confusing. And I'm starting to have fear or getting angry about something. So we got through the evening review on step 11, and he talks about these as the two pillars. Step 3 and 11 are really together. Step 3 is a decision you make that you're going to have God be your director, right? That there is a power that can relieve me of my alcoholism, and it's God, and I want him to be my director. And then 11 is how we implement that every day through prayer and meditation. So we're on page 138 of the handout, which is in the morning. And the morning, they start with the evening review, and we talked about that a little bit. And I think it's important. There were several reasons. One, because The Hebrew day starts at night. And two, the most important, I think, was because unless we clear up the wreckage of the day when we wake up, we're still carrying it around. And so the nightly review, and I've recorded the podcast on that on the site, experiencethebigbook.org. The nightly review is on page 86, and I really try to do that every night. And it doesn't take long. And then the morning instructions are on page 86 of step 11. And here he says, morning deals with what we do in the morning. When we get up in the morning, it says in the big book, it says when we wake up, we think of our plans for the day. Anything wrong with that? No. But they say, they know it's bad because it's our plans. So it says before we begin, we ask God to direct my thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. And I say that every morning. Almost every morning before I get out of bed when I wake up, because I want to be God directed each day, and I want to, it's an admission when I wake up of my step three decision that I want to surrender and have God be my director. And when I don't do it right away, I start thinking of my day, and then I have to stop and I have to do it. And on the days when I did do it at all, I could tell at 8:30 or whatever it's. But I usually do my morning meditation and my prayer, and I almost never forget that. It says, when we get up in the morning, we ask God to direct our lives for that day. And he says, this is not going back and making the decision of step three every day. We do this instead to remind ourselves of our commitment each day. And what is our commitment, really? Is to seek God in all things. God can and will if he is sought. I need to seek God's will for me all the time. Now, if I don't do that and I get into self-will, how will I know that? I'll become afraid. I'll get angry. I'll be bothered. I'll get judging. If you go to work, people start to bother you. The office isn't run well. They're not doing what you like, blah, blah, blah. It can be infinitum. So most people get up each morning, and Joe and Charlie talk about this in their big book series, and we all get ready for the day, and you know, we eat breakfast and we take our showers and do our stuff, and we rush off. And they say, how much better or greater our lives could be if we spent as much time preparing our minds each day as we spent preparing ourselves, our clothes, our bodies. He says, I know how well my car would run if I treated it the same neglect that I do my mind. It wouldn't get me across town. I would never go without changing the oil or doing what needs to be done to keep that car going. We often don't take the same care with our lives. So he says, if we simply ask God to direct our thinking in the morning, we will be more mindful of his directions all day. Well, what I wrote as a note is, it puts me in the right attitude. It puts me in the attitude of humility, needing God. It's really the first step every day, isn't it? Saying that you need God's power, you need help. You don't want to run the show. If we ask God to keep our thinking free from wrong motives, now what is a wrong motive? A wrong motive is anything I think I need to do for me that's self-directed. And it can be very subtle, because you could think you're doing it for other people, but your motives could be people-pleasing or getting approval or recognition or getting things you want. You have to be very careful. We can live better lives tapping into this inner resource of strength each day. It's an unsuspected inner resource. They say that on, I think, in the spiritual experience, that we tapped into an unsuspected inner resource. And this inner resource gives us strength and power and gives me faith and trust each day. And the more you tap into it, the more you realize how effective it is when we allow it to work in our lives. God can direct my life in many ways that we are incapable of. We can only see so far, though our vision, we cannot see the things that lie ahead. Now, I saw a lot of things that lay ahead, but they were always the wrong things. And I wasted a lot of time seeing wrong things. My whole life was seeing wrong things, seeing things that I had to worry about and I had to fix and take care of. And we know from the experience of traveling with self-will how we can direct our lives into a lot of catastrophes. Anybody do that? Isn't that the whole story of our whole life? He says, I love the passage of the Bible that says, thou shalt not be afraid of terror by night, nor the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in the darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. Can you imagine being out in a field with thousands of arrows coming at you? God can direct us through those arrows. We can't. God can direct us through arrows and pestilence. God has all power. And God will show me how to be able to face arrows and not be afraid. Because I can handle calamity with serenity if I stay close to God. As we practice the nightly review and the morning meditation, we become more skilled at them. These things will become the pillars of our day. So I've heard people comment when they forget their morning meditation, things don't go as well. And their prayer, when they don't do their nightly review, things don't go as well. So if you're new, make that a habit. Read page 86, look at the nightly review. Say the prayer on page 86 and you've started your process. Then you can add other prayers and other things to this. We're only talking about a few minutes at night and a few minutes in the morning given to our spiritual health. Think of, and the more time you give to your spiritual health, the better your spiritual health is. Anybody like to exercise? If you like to exercise, the more you do it, the better you feel, the more fit you are. Well, the same with spiritual exercise. The more you practice your spiritual prayer and meditation, the more fit you'll become spiritually. The more you work steps 10, where you're watching all day for your separation for God, the more effective you'll become spiritually. We would have 23 hours and 50 minutes still to mess up our lives and run the show ourselves if we spent 10 minutes. So you still have plenty of time to screw your life up. Don't worry about it. Most people think of prayer and meditation taking hours and hours of sitting around. Now, I listen to a lot of speakers, and they do these hour and a half prayer and meditations every morning and this and that. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think after a while, some of it can become self-analysis. You know, how effective it is, that's up to each individual. But if you spend a nightly review and you're spending a very complicated amount of time writing out four steps every night, I don't know if that's really helpful. But whatever you do, if it works, it's great. Most of us are active people, and this is a simple thing that we can put into our lives without a lot of difficulty. It will give us strength to live by. Because the nightly review's purpose is to have a brief look at your day, see where you were separated from God, ask for corrective measures and God's forgiveness, and then in the morning it's to pray and seek God's direction and strength and keep you from your self-will. The third valuable suggestion deals with indecision. We all face indecision because we don't always have the knowledge and the understanding or the capacity to handle things that come up throughout the day. Now, notice this follows the big book's instructions, page 86 is nightly review, then the morning, then it says when we face indecision, we ask God to direct our thinking and we relax and take it easy and allow God to give us the right answer. We face indecision because we don't always have the knowledge or the understanding of the capacity to handle things that come up throughout the day. Now, one of my problems was I never had indecision. I always had to decide. I didn't say it, you know, I don't know. I reacted. When I react to things, then I react and make a decision on what I need to do, but I'm reacting on self. If I react when I'm God-centered, I may not know the right answer. And then I welcome that opportunity to not make the decision. It became very powerful to me when I would realize I'd be struggling something and then I would say, you know, I don't need to make the decision. I can give it to God and say, God, give me the right answer and it'll come. And that's so, I can't tell you how great that is when you do that. And the right answer is always coming. It's usually an answer I would never have thought of myself. He says, if we could realize, accept the fact that we're human, we'd be in a good place to start handling decisions. It's right not to know anything. Now, this ties in with the pause. They don't talk a lot about the pause in here, but the pause is at the end of the instructions on how you work the steps. It says, when you're agitated or doubtful, you pause and ask for the right thought or action. Pausing means you don't know. You need God to give you the right thought, and this indecision goes along with the pausing. So when you face a situation, it's okay to pause and not react. Now, I don't know about you, but I used to react. And when I reacted, and I wasn't in fit spiritual condition, it didn't go well. Anybody do that? In fact, alcoholics now have an opportunity to practice this unfit spiritual condition all the time through texting. You know, you can react to people all day long and send them the text, and there you go. And so we have unlimited opportunities now to abuse ourselves and others. I don't know about you, but it is amazing. I don't get on Facebook, but I think Facebook is another one of these opportunities too. We have to realize that human life is short. We're only on Earth for comparatively short of time, so it's impossible for us to know any significant part of what there is to know. Here's my thought. I'm only here a short period of time. I don't want to waste any more time on fear or anger and feeling guilty. I really don't want to do any more. So when I get fear, I just stop. I don't want to waste any more time on it. I wasted my whole life on fear. And I do get angry and disturbed, and I try to get undisturbed and at peace very quickly. I don't want to be disturbed. I don't know if that makes any sense, because when I did my fourth step, I realized how much of my life I wasted in anger and fear. And that's what you're really doing in the nightly review, is seeing where did you waste time during the day with self-centered nonsense. It says, I realize that God probably has a million answers to every problem I have. Since he can see all and knows all, he can direct my life through and around these things. He also has a covenant with me. He has given me self-will, and he will allow me to struggle on the basis of this self-will when I insist. I'm going to read that again. To struggle on the basis of this self-will when I insist. I have to insist to struggle on the basis of self. It's a choice. When I realize this is happening, if I choose to, I can turn the problem over to God, relax, take it easy, and not struggle. Whenever I get any kind of ingratitude or unusual concern about things or whatever, I go to page 100. I have it memorized. And I say to myself, it says, when you look back, the things that happened when you put yourself in God's hands were better than anything you could have imagined. Now think about that. Now that is the greatest promise to me in the big book, and it's so true. When I look back and I think about my car when I went into treatment and looking at the back seat and the things that have happened to me since then, you couldn't have predicted. And we heard that when we'd celebrate birthdays. And so there were a lot of things that have happened in my sobriety, but when I put in God's hands, they turned out different than anything I could imagine. One of the great tragedies in my life, my son's death, is why I'm here doing the Saturday morning meeting. And we've all been through things like that. We don't know how things can turn out. But if we give them to God, it's going to be better than anything I could have thought of. I could take any decision over to God and go on with my life. I have to admit it and turn it over to God, and I've become free of the frustration. I still haven't solved the problem, but as long as I'm wrestling with indecision, I can't solve the problem or handle anything in my life. So this thing about indecision is really powerful, because if you're struggling with a problem, then you're living in the problem. And we talk about that all the time. And we have this saying, live in the solution. Well, what does that mean? It means give up the problem to God and then go ahead and do what he's assigned you to do right now. And that was part of that fear thing. How does God want me to be? Remove my fear. Direct my attention to how I should be. How should I be right now? Grateful, humble, trusting, faithful. And so it says, when I let go of the problem, I do not solve the problem, but I freed myself for other things. Mm. Now in the big book, when you get to page 45, they've told you you're screwed. You're powerless over alcohol, you can't manage your own life, you have no choice to drink, and you have no control when you drink. So they say, lack of power, that's your dilemma. We need a power by which we can live, and it can't be me. And it says, the power solves the problem. So when you let go of your alcohol problem and managing your life, and you work the steps and you give it to God, God solves the problem. That's why when I have birthdays, I ask the people, how are you let God in doing it? It's all God. If I'm doing it, then I'm going to screw up. And so God solves the problem. God takes away the problem. I don't solve anything. And so I have to remember that. And now I need his will to play the role he assigned. I need to know what God's role is for me each day. And then I have to stay close to him. And that's what steps 4 through 9 have taught me, and then live in steps 10 and 11. It says, sometimes the directions on the top of the page, the answers will come from within me. Now here's another one. A lot of times they will come from other people. And the thing is, God works through people. This should make me more mindful that God is within other people regardless of who they are. And sometimes you can't imagine who's going to give you the right answer. I used to have a big problem trying to select the people that I was willing to listen to very carefully. I wanted to listen to only knowledgeable people, but I've realized that God speaks through all kinds of people. And you never know. If your mind's open and you've given the problem to God, something will happen. Things will come up. People will tell you things. And it'll give you the right answer. Sometimes the answer comes from within me. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. We've all had hunches, but we found that we really can't live on hunches. They come when they want to and go when they want to. They're not reliable. It's hard when you have a new spot, see, and they've made some incredible decision that they tell you about, and then they tell you that God told them it's the right thing. And you just look. I mean, what could you say? But you just try to talk it through with them, because sometimes I can get confused, and sometimes I've confused God's will for me, but it's really my self-centered will, and I'm justifying it or changing it in my mind so it makes sense. And I don't know about you, but I did that my whole life when I was an active alcoholic. The Big Sis book says that if we keep practicing the program, they will gradually become a working part of our minds. So there's a part of your mind that you don't want to use. It's your alcoholic mind. You want to use the God part of your mind. And I think what we do is we have a battle in there all day long between my ego mind and God's will for me. And so we have to constantly let go of our old ideas and be open to God's ideas. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's a battle. Because you can wake up and pray and meditate for 5 hours, get in the car, and you're stewing about something. And so it's a minute-by-minute program that we talk about in step 10. Step 11 is how we get in the right frame of mind and learn how to use it. If we practice the program, we can live successfully. Anybody agree with that? Absolutely. We don't have all the answers, but this tool will get any answer we need. See, I don't have to have the answers in my little head. And the one thing that helps me that is to stay right in the now. What's actually happening right this minute, and what do I need to do right this minute, rather than the decision that I'm worrying about in 3 hours? Why waste any time out of the now? So staying in the now with God is really when I get the right answers, and I just have to do the role he assigns. It says the fourth valuable suggestion deals with prayer. Most people are having problems in their lives have an ineffective prayer life. I think that's probably true. And a lot of people don't want to try prayer because they don't think it works. And then they won't do it because they don't think it works. And then they tell you it doesn't work because they don't want to do it. And I tell you, it really does work when you do it. And it becomes a working part of your mind. I think the working part of my mind is that I'm trying to seek God all the time when I know I'm off the beam. He says, I couldn't effectively use prayer to get directions because I use my prayers to give directions. Which is so true. I mean, a lot of my prayers were foxhole prayers. Or I was praying to have God's will be to get my will be done. It was my will, not thine be done, help me. I think that's not in the New Testament. I think it's different. Yeah, I rewrote the Old New Testament. Prayer is meant to be where we receive our directions, but I use my whole prayer life directing God, telling him what to do. And I think that's where he's helped me a lot. I don't pray for specific things anymore. I just pray for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. And I ask for a vision of his will in all my activities. I just keep it simple. And if I pray for anyone, I ask them that they open their mind to their Creator, that they open their mind to receive his will for them. And I ask for that for myself too. He says it's very hard to switch 180 degrees and going from directing God to him directing you. And in fact, you hear this at the meetings all the time. People say, well, I took my will back. Have you ever heard that? I gave it to God and I took it back. Anybody ever heard that at the meeting? But really what we're doing is redirecting our lives all the time. And it says we are people who have lost our direction in life. And the main thing we need is God's direction. So I'm going to stop there. We'll have some time to talk about the birthdays. And is this helpful?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So we'll bring it back and we'll finish it next week. Is that okay? All right. And I've got some extra handouts. So thanks, everybody. Yeah.